You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, the letter N, sweettea.com.
Oh, when the Blues go marching in! Oh, when the Blues go marching in! Oh, how I want to be in the number! Oh, when the Blues go marching in!
Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Tim here. I've got with me today two new friends from the state of Wisconsin and the Forward Madison fan base. Daniel and Keith, how are you doing today, guys?
Great. Fantastic. How are you, Tim?
Fantastic.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking time out of your day. Guys, could you tell them real quick before I forget, because it's something I'm absolutely terrible about doing, where they can possibly find you online?
That's actually
a running joke.
Yeah, this is actually difficult because our Twitter handle is terrible because I left Keith in charge of it. So the name of our podcast is Forwards Backwards Pod. You can find us on Twitter at Forwards Back Wah 2. And then I think, you know, on Facebook, if you just Google Forwards Backwards Podcast, we'll pop up there. We're not on Instagram.
No, nobody wants to see pictures of us.
Yeah.
We have faces for you. Yeah.
It's all right. My mom gave me a face for podcast too. I completely understand. So for you Asheville City fans out there, I was had the pleasure of meeting Dan and a couple of the Forward Madison fans on their 2019 Eruption Tour. Dan, could you tell everybody a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So the whole kind of spark for this trip was that Connor Tobin, who is our captain of Forward Madison, a longtime lower league player in America, he played in for FC or North Carolina FC for 4 or 5 seasons. He's just a really good guy, and he did a lot of great community work there. Really built some really strong networks with the supporters groups there. Long story short, they did not have a home game a couple weekends back, but we were playing against the Richmond Kickers. They reached out to Connor and said, hey, we'd love to come up and support you guys, but, you know, we want to go full Mingo, and we can't do that without Wisconsin beer. And this whole thing then snowballed into the club and the supporters jumping into a 14-seat minibus with a keg of Spotted Cow, a bunch of White Claws, a bunch of cases of beer, and snaking our way across America to meet up with these supporters groups in Richmond.
And one of the cool things is you can't get Spotted Cow outside of Wisconsin. Only sold here in the state of Wisconsin. So I think that was pretty big catch of the trip.
Yeah, yeah.
And where did you stop on this tour?
First stop was in Chicago. So for those of you out there who are kind of lower league soccer and just American soccer fans, Peter Wilt is the managing director of Forward Madison. So we actually first couple stops were with teams that he was involved in starting. So the Chicago Red Stars, the women's professional soccer team in Chicago, met with their front office, then continued on to Indianapolis and met up with the Indy 11, some of their front office members and supporters. The first day ended in Columbus, where we met up with the Nordeca, who were real amazing sports. I mean, we were 3.5 hours late, I think, at that point, and they hung out until then. And then the next day was the big mystery stop on our trip. And I think another kind of a good indication of how our club is always looking for something fun and goofy on the margins. We stopped in Mingo County, West Virginia, and we met with the county commissioner there named Hootie. We actually made it into the newspaper. There were two members of the press there covering this.
I think actually what were Hootie's first words? Because you guys, like, people knew you were coming, right?
Yeah, well, so it was about 104 degrees, literally. And we pulled in, we found a place to park the bus. We walked over to City Hall where we were supposed to meet him. And we're all just kind of milling around on the front steps. And Hootie walked up and said, y'all must be the Mingos. and we said, yes, we are, Hootie. And incredible hosts. We traded some beer with them. We got some West Virginia moonshine in for us. And really just an incredible – one of those just – I mean, how perfect. You know, we gave them scarves that said Full Mingo. I think there's some talk about maybe sending down some jerseys for their high school soccer team. We got to meet the high school soccer coach, but just like an incredible experience. And one of those moments where I'm standing there, I'm like, I cannot believe I'm in Mingo County, West Virginia, supporting a third division soccer team. Like this is pretty amazing. And I wonder what my dad would think about this.
Dan, get a job.
My dad, the giant baseball fan who I don't think he ever really liked coming to my soccer games. And then then we ended up, I think we came to you, right, Tim? I think Asheville, yep. Asheville yep. that night, met up with you guys at Highwire. You guys were great. Great hosts. It was kind of cool to see our owner get to speak with your owner. And, I know they went over and took a stadium tour. And then the next day, actually, we just bombed it all the way to Richmond with one quick stop over with the Total Soccer guys for a four square tournament and some more photo ops. So, and then made it to the stadium.
We should give a shout out that the Richmond City supporters welcomed you guys for a barbecue before the game. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny on Twitter. I give Dan control of our poorly named Twitter feed and he threatens to start, like, there was some threat of starting a rumble outside of town. I think just kind of as a send up of the fact that, like, everywhere you guys went, everybody was just so welcoming and really reached out and were gracious and fantastic hosts.
Yeah, and at the risk of diving into the whole, like, USL, debate, I guess there were some phone calls or emails made during the week that they were a little concerned about all these supporters groups getting together, which was just hilarious. And so
the league office was?
Yeah, I think when they saw the numbers, I don't know if we want to get into the whole USL thing. I know there's a lot of Twitter discussions about USL and all that, but it was a little, I was bemused, let's just say, when the entire point of the trip was, I think, to celebrate lower league soccer in America and get people together and show that we're all in this for the soccer and having fun. And I really cannot say enough about, the Richmond supporters, the North Carolina supporters, everyone we met, Asheville. It was one of the most memorable trips I've ever been on in my life.
Yeah, I thought it was especially cool. I don't know who put it up at the end of your trip, but they got home. I'm assuming they slept for us all like 18 hours. And then the first picture they put up on Twitter was all seven of the scarves that they had collected on the trip. Yeah. And it really, really kind of meant something to us here in Asheville to see the South Slope Blues scarf literally right in the middle. If I'm not mistaken, I think it really was the fourth one from the left or right. Right in the middle of, an NWSL, an MLS, the USL, USL. It just kind of was a scarf pyramid almost in a way. And I know it's not an open pyramid, but it really did show the width and breadth of the trip that you guys took and the interactions that you had. So we loved having you guys. We're always looking for networking opportunities. That's the way our ownership thought of it as they were speaking to your owner. I specifically do have some issues and challenges with a lot of how USL operates and the Fed operates, the pyramid, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things I have certainly learned through, a couple of years now on Twitter debating this is that oftentimes fans just have to, they have the best intentions in their heart. And if they're supporting their local club and they really do truly believe in club over league, then it's not the fans that anybody needs to be pointing their animus at. It's bigger than that. So we loved having you guys here. But let's take one step back real quick. Madison, Wisconsin, it's not exactly thought of as a hotbed of really truly any sport other than college football off the top of my head. I apologize if you guys have an amazing like university water polo team. But
we're good at hockey.
What did you guys do in Madison for soccer before Peter Will and the ownership kind of brought together Forward Madison?
Well, and it's kind of, strange because I grew up here. Dan didn't. He's a carpetbagger. We had an NPSL team in the Madison 56ers who played. I attend a lot of, we had the, it's a strong university town. So there was the UW college team playing as well. So there are those things. And then the other thing that I think gets overlooked is we're only an hour and a half from Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is a traditional in the way that I think St. Louis is, in the way that a lot of these old American, you know, heartland cities were. You know, and Dan and I, Dan grew up a little bit in Milwaukee, and we've traded stories about, like, in Milwaukee, I would go down there, and that's where we played a lot of competitive soccer. They have Marquette University High School, which is one of the all-time, you know, strong prep powerhouses. Much to my chagrin, I went to a rival here in Madison, a public school that we played against them. But you had all these, you know, for lack of a better term, ethnic clubs there. You had the Bavarians, you had the Serbians, you had Polonia, and there were huge rivalries.
Yeah.
And one of the cool things on Twitter, for anybody that's kind of interested in American soccer before, you know, MLS or any of that, Bob Ganza, who's the son of the former U.S. men's national team, has a Twitter account where he posts, like, old articles from the 30s and 40s and 50s from the journal, Milwaukee Journal archives. And you can see soccer in Wisconsin has existed for a very long time. And related to that, you know, Waukesha, Wisconsin was actually the first place in the United States to host a soccer match. So non-traditional hotbed, but it's, you know, I think it's like everything we do in Wisconsin, we don't like to talk about it.
So when did the first rumors that you guys remember hearing about a club coming, a sanctioned pro club coming to Madison?
Sure. Yeah. So, and just by way of background as well, the ownership group that owns Forward Madison FC is one of the most successful collegiate, or not one of the most successful collegiate summer baseball club owners in the country. The Madison Mallards here routinely draw in the top 25 of all minor league baseball teams at like 7,000 a game, and it's collegiate summer baseball. Let's be clear, the baseball is terrible, but they know how to run a business. They know how to get people out. They know how to do entertainment. And so they took over, they kind of a public-private partnership with the stadium about 4 or 5 years ago. And I think around then some rumblings that they were, you know, that they saw more use for the stadium, and, you know, they had put in turf and, you know, things starting to bounce around that they were looking at different options for joining a soccer club. I think when it really started to, I would say in about late 2017, when they had to start engaging with the neighborhood, I happened to be living in that neighborhood at the time.
One of your six residents.
Yes. This is a running joke. I've moved a lot. If you ever need real estate advice in Madison, I'm your guy.
But there's every neighborhood.
I actually went to one of the meetings and fully aware of who these guys were and all that, but also very skeptical because the baseball team, while very successful, it's a little bit of a circus at their games. I mean, you basically forget you're watching a baseball game. I think if they were sitting here with me, they might, you know, kind of
object.
Shrug that off. Yeah. But I think they would also admit that, you know, they know that they got to keep people engaged for, you know, 3 to 42 hours, however long a baseball game takes. And I was concerned that they were going to walk in and try and just plop that model down on a professional soccer team. And what I remember from that meeting, you know, was that a lot of humility about, you know, I think they originally thought that's what they were going to do. We can just take our model, put it on professional soccer, and off we go. And they said the more they started going around the country to visit stadiums, I actually know they took a trip to Richmond and they went to other places. And I think they realized, oh, this is different. Like, and we don't necessarily understand this model the way we thought we did. And I left that meeting that night feeling, okay, these guys, you know, they don't think they have all the answers. And I left feeling good about that this was going to be, that at least that gave them a leg up in making this successful.
And I think the soccer community here was fairly skeptical. First of all, you know, we're a growing city, you know, we're about 250,000, but it's like, can we sustain this? Is it going to be a soccer-centered, you know, program? I think, like most long-term fans of the sport, you know, people have been burned before. They're skeptical. I had I think in 2017 or 18, been to a game down in Milwaukee, and the attendance wasn't great. The product on the field wasn't great. And I was a little skeptical of this is what we're going to get. And then I mean, honestly, for a lot of people, I think just hearing the name Peter Wilt, is, you know, that yeah. they had brought him on, it provides a sort of imprimatur of this guy knows soccer. You may not agree with all of his positions, but he's built clubs. He does it unique to, I think, each city. I think, you know, in talking probably to the Indy 11 folks, mm-hmm. they didn't feel like what they had done was, you know, what they have is like what we have. And so he knew how to kind of build it from the ground up. And I think that, you know, for a lot of us immediately gave some street cred. And then, you know, they did the big announcement, Madison Pro Soccer. And then they just started, you know, flooding the streets with scarves, really is what it came down to. But there was still, you know, I was skeptical the sort of whole time. And I think one of the things that relieved the skepticism is when they announced the team in November. I went, announced the name and the crest in November. I went with a friend of mine, big soccer fan, and you know, we knew some people working for the team. So it was just kind of like, we're showing up to, you know, give support to our guys, our friends who we think might be out of a job in 6 months. And, they packed an auditorium to announce the crest and the name of the team. And it's like, are you kidding? Like, you know, so there was this pent up demand, and you know, the legwork had gone in, and people were, as soon as they announced the crest, people were going and buying the merch right away. I mean, they were blown away by the design and how cool and how it kind of fit into the story of Madison. So that's when I was like, oh, maybe this isn't just going to be, you know, four soccer moms and a couple of weirdos.
We love soccer moms
in the stands, you know, that we might get an actual crowd and really like. The environment at Bree Stevens, we're really, really lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a cool place. It's unique, I think, in that it's like, you know, in Europe where you have the stadium right in the city center. It's not out in, you know, a suburb or something like yeah. that. And so, you know, I think it just kind of started snowballing. Once you thought about like being able to pack in Bree Stevens, I mean, I played there growing up. That's where the state championships were. Way back in the old days. And one of the things Dan and I have promised is that we'll never talk about our playing days on the podcast, but it's just,
we're on a different podcast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, but just from an atmosphere perspective, you know, it keeps noise in. It's an old stadium. It's, you know, 4,500 people, you know, you can get a little bit more in there if you wanted, but it's just such a cool place. And so I think once, you know, people saw what it could be, that helped pick up the, you know, momentum, and then it just kind of went from there.
So I know you guys have a hard out here in a minute, but one of the things that I 100% wanted to ask, because by this point, I would imagine almost, you know, all of the tens of people that listen to my podcast, they probably know your crest. They probably know a little bit about your branding. I'm sure they positively, absolutely understand also the fun your social media has and some of the game day promotions you've had. But one of the problems that I have with USL is often how they often treat some of their clubs almost like McDonald's franchise. And you know, they take a very sanitized product and they just drop it into a city, and they find an ownership that just wants to, you know, bring in a couple thousand people and have a good soccer night out with the family and whatnot. But you guys have obviously tapped into something different beyond, you know, the cow mascot and the Hacksaw Jim Duggan promotion night.
Yeah.
How has it, and what is it that Ford Madison has done to reflect the actual community of Madison? Because that is unlike maybe like Tucson, or we're not big fans of Greenville here in Asheville by any stretch of the imagination, whether it be the NPSL team or the USL League One team. But those clubs, they just seem very cookie cutter, whereas obviously you guys aren't. So what is it that you guys have been able to tap into and reflect from the community outwards?
Yeah, and you know, that's a great question, and I don't think we're going to have even all of, you know, even a fraction of all the answers, but I think one... You know, one thing I've thought a lot about our city is that, you know, I've lived here now for 8 years. My wife grew up here. I've been coming here for years. it's gone from being a university town and a government town that was a great place to raise your kids and, you know, decent stuff to do and Badger sports and all that. But we have like a, you know, we've without name dropping the company, you know, we've got a big company right outside of town that has 12,000 employees. We've got this, we have people moving here from all over the country. And I think
They're young people. They're young college graduates.
Yeah, they're young, you know, they fit that demographic of what you want. You know, they're young, they're progressive, they have disposable income. And I think they've moved here and a lot of them are looking for some way to connect with the city and they might not be UW-Madison alumni. Now, listen, I'm sure they go to a football game or two a year. I'm sure they go to a basketball game. But I think the way this club kind of engaged the community and made people feel like, hey, this could be your team. And you might not even be a sports fan, but you love Madison. And this is a way to express that. I mean, I see a lot of people at our games who I don't think a year ago would have categorized themselves as soccer fans, maybe didn't categorize themselves as sports fans.
Maybe even not Madisonians.
Yeah.
You know, I think it helped a lot of people create the identity. The other thing, and I cannot say enough good things about the leaders of the flock. And a couple of them, you know, and there's a wide variety of them. You know, Chris and Liam and Andrew and you know, all of that. A couple of them, you know, came out of the Arsenal supporters group here in Madison. And that's one of the good things that, you know, Peter Wilt and the ownership group did is they reached out to local supporters groups. So there was that infrastructure in place. But their supporters group was always dedicated to the community as well. It wasn't just a lot of supporters group. They get together on Saturday morning, you know, watch the games and then go home. The Arsenal supporters group started doing more charitable stuff. They did a big St. Baldrick's Day, you know, kind of deal in November. And we started the club or the supporters group started doing stuff before the season even started. I'm work with a club here for kids who might not have the chance to play soccer otherwise in the Madison area. And like a year ago in August, they organized a foot golf outing to raise money for that group. For Madison supporters group. And a guy came down from Fond du Lac, I remember that day. And like already the seeds were, you know, being planted. And then, you know, we talked last week on our podcast with William Schultz and Tyler Engel from the Wisconsin Warriors Power Soccer Team, which is it's power wheelchair soccer. And in January, they got like 10 or 15 guys out to work the lines, do the scoreboards for that. And like every month there was something. And then, you know, today on our pod as well, we're selling our own pod here, Dan. Cross promotion at its best. We're going to have
This is all a trade, right, Tim? I don't think any money is going to switch.
Yeah. but we're going to have Amanda Klingner on who leads the volunteer programs for the flock. And I think, you know, that's stuff that keeps people engaged with the club all year long before there's even a club. And it makes everybody kind of realize that there's more than, you know, just the soccer on the field, that, you know, the supporter section is a community and not just people get together, watch games. It's much more than that.
No, I absolutely love that. And I do have a few listeners over in Chattanooga. And quite honestly, what you're saying sounds much, much, much like what Galen and a lot of the Chattahooligans have told me about how oftentimes where they found their success wasn't necessarily in Chattanooga being a soccer town. It sounds like you guys may have been more of a soccer town. But what ended up happening was the fan base became a fan base of the city, and they just chose to express themselves at soccer games. Yes. I love what you guys are doing. Long may it continue. We hope to see you again. We've already started kind of chatting, a few of us, about maybe making a road trip up next summer to see a game or to catch you on the road. Dan, Keith, thank you so much. One more time, can you tell everybody where they can find you?
I'll try. So on Twitter at forwardsbackwa2. On Facebook and all these, it's just the forwards backwards podcast.
It's just, there's no the, it's MLS. It's forwards apostrophe S backwards. It's podcast.
It's and forwards backwards. Now we've just ruined it. Just Google forwards backwards podcast.
Find us on Spotify, on Apple, on
SoundCloud.
SoundCloud. Yeah.
guys, check them out. They have a lot of fun on their podcast. I love what they do. Guys, thank you again. And we'll chat soon.
Yeah, all thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
And welcome back. I will be by myself for the second half of this episode, something I don't do very often, but we have had some stuff happening within Asheville, within North Carolina, and just within the lower leagues itself that I wanted to touch on and explore a little bit with you guys and catch you up to what has happened in the last maybe 6 or 7 weeks since we did an episode. So first and foremost, Asheville specific. Soccer, you know, while Asheville City may only be a 2-3 month out of the year season, soccer does go on all year round here in Asheville. It's part of the reason why Asheville is a soccer city. So first and foremost, over the Labor Day weekend, we had the Beer City Cup, and wouldn't you know it, in the open division, the Asheville native Color Tones won. We actually had a strange kind of cross-utilization of players in that situation. Joe Lacasto, who played for UNCA last year, he captained them. He did graduate, and he played for Asheville City over the summer, and now he's back at UNCA as a coach. He was on that team along with other Asheville natives, and wouldn't you know it, Marco from Greenville got picked up by the Color Tones, and in the semifinals, he scored the only goal, and in the final, Marco scored the tournament-deciding penalty kick after that had gone to extras, and he won it for the Color Tones. So, Marco, thank you very much. Joe, as always, it's awesome to see you. And to all the guys on the Color Tones, if I knew all of you, I hope to meet you guys someday. But great job representing Asheville. We do appreciate it. So going around the county, it is the fall. It is obviously high school football season, but it's also high school soccer season. And Asheville is just ripe and thick with good, good high school soccer teams here in the area and across the state. TC Robertson and Asheville are both ranked in Max Prep's top 20 for high schools. AC Reynolds is obviously a perennial powerhouse in the area and across the state. I can't recommend to you guys enough that if you have a afternoon free and there's some local high school soccer going on, please try to make it out. Tickets are cheap, $4 or $5, $10 at most. You're going to see some Asheville City players on those teams, specifically some of the women's teams between Hope Ingram and a few others. Last year, we had a decent amount of high school students on the Asheville City women's team. And of course, if you think, you know, one step further with that, a lot of our high schoolers in the area attended the Asheville City Academy over the summer. All the credit goes back to the ownership of Asheville City in creating this interconnectivity of pathways for local talent into both the higher levels of amateur and eventually pro players. Ways back, there was a map going around where you could click on different cities and you could actually see what professional players came from what cities. And if you clicked on Asheville, the number was zero. Supposedly, and I don't know if they had missed somebody, but Asheville has never produced a professional soccer player. I'm assuming out of our high schools, maybe somebody who went to UNCA played, but that's the sort of change that the ownership of Asheville City is looking to inspire. That is the pathway that they are trying to create. Eventually, all the way, I've heard rumors that there's even something that's in the works potentially for the spring that can even draw more youth. And I do mean that not your 15 or 16 year olds, but specifically your 7, your 10s, your 12s, the ones that are either playing park and recs or on a travel team or on that HFC shield kind of level. This event is meant to inspire and show a clear pathway for any youth who, whether they want to take it or not, but at least what it would look like to be a 7, a 10, a 12, a 15, an 18, and then a 21-year-old in the soccer landscape, specifically in Asheville. Creating those pathways is the way to think globally, but act locally, which has been the mission of the Just Play Initiative. It has been the mission of Asheville City in general, and it continues to be something that I believe this community can rally around. Speaking of UNCA, both their seasons have started, obviously. I'm going to talk about the men first. The men, you're going to see some very familiar faces from Asheville City with the men's side. Like I said, Joe and obviously Coach Mick are on the coaching staff at UNCA, but even within the roster itself, you're going to see lots of local Asheville products. You're going to see Jared Payne. You're going to see others who went to the high schools from this area, individuals who are, again, part of the AC Academy over the summer. Because Coach Mick does coach Asheville City men, there isn't quite that same crossbreeding of rosters as you see with the women. So with the women, Molly Dwyer, if you guys didn't know, had joined their coaching staff, but all up and down their roster, you see a lot of Asheville City women's players. You see Maya Gutman, you see Bryson Lee. There's just a lot of crossover when it comes to those two rosters. So if you guys have some time, please go out, see a UNCA game, whether it be the men or the women's. Greenwood Field is a great venue to see some high-level soccer action in your backyard. If you're jonesing for one of those memorial nights, they have 6 o'clock kickoffs. And speaking of which, very specifically, here coming up in 2 weeks from yesterday, on October 12th, at 3:30 and at 6, UNCA has approached the other segments of the soccer community in Asheville. So whether it be the Asheville City ownership, whether it be the South Slope Blues, whether it be the YMCA, and whether it be the ABASA, they have reached out and they want to showcase what UNCA does for those who maybe haven't had the opportunity or the desire to go out there and see what they do. So on that day, October 12th, Saturday, October 12th at 3:30 and at 6, the men play first and then the women. And they are inviting the soccer community out for $4. That is a dollar for 45 minutes of soccer. That is a dollar a half of soccer for 2 full games. 2 conference games for the UNCA men who play first and then the UNCA women who play second. This is the best deal in soccer that week in probably the country, to be quite honest. And it's an opportunity specifically for South Slope Blues and for Asheville City supporters to go out and support local soccer. Yes, the South Slope Blues are specifically an independent supporters group of Asheville City. Of course they are. But when we say we will follow where you go, we don't just mean during the course of those 3 months. If you look at how some of the Asheville City players from years past have moved on, whether it be to the professional ranks with the men, whether it be to other colleges for the women, we continue to follow them and support what they do, because for those 3 months during the course of the summer, they came and gave it all for what we love. So, of course, we need to turn that around and during the other 9 months, show them that we remember and appreciate what they did during those 3 months and support them. So we are going to go to UNCA one more time on Saturday, October 12th at 3:30 and at 6 for $4. We get 2 games. You can go on UNCA's website and buy tickets using the promo code AVL Soccer, and for $4, get a ticket to both these games. The South Slope Blues will be there. We'll be there with the drums. We'll be there with the smoke. We're really, truly going to prove that we will follow wherever they go. So speaking of Asheville City, though, there have been a few updates on different things that kind of were worrying us as a fan base a couple months ago. Obviously, first and foremost, there was the massive push over the summer, over the late summer after the season had ended, to affect some community change and input into the Memorial Stadium renovation. At the present moment, there still is not anything to officially announce. The input session went extremely well leading up to it. There had been two different plans that had been proposed. One of them had a track around the field. It had even less seating than this competitive design. This design basically would have shrunk the pitch to smaller, maybe about the size of a high school pitch, but certainly would not have been enough to bring in talent for Asheville City. It would not have been a great viewing experience for any fans or supporters who would come to those games. It just wasn't right for Asheville City. And not just for Asheville City Soccer, but also potentially for the city of Asheville, because whereas the track would have been there, and I've heard passionate discussion for the need for a track in Asheville, but the other users of Memorial, whether it be Ultimate Frisbee, whether it be rugby, whether it have been the rec leagues that use it, shrinking that pitch down would have just not been beneficial for any of these organizations. And while it remains a public park in Asheville, the most amount of use needs to get use of it. Remember, Asheville City has never claimed Memorial as their own. We understand that it is the cities, and we feel very, or the owners and the supporters feel very fortunate enough just to be able to call it home. We are stewards. We are not owners. And we want it to be there and in the best shape possible for everybody and for what we think Asheville needs to host the most professional sporting events possible, professional with little p, not big P. So there was supposed to be a vote on a final design last week, actually. I think it was Tuesday, September 24th. Obviously, the city council has been dealing with different discussions, whether it be pertaining to the hotels that are in discussion to be built, what to do with those, what to do. Our police chief just left recently after only being on the job for a couple of months. Just a lot of actual city kind of procedural stuff has been going on recently to fill these city council meetings. So Memorial got bumped. Currently, it is on the agenda for Tuesday, October 22nd. And that will be the final vote on the final design that will go forwards. Because they are voting on this on October 22nd, I cannot foresee a situation where they have dug into the ground at Memorial or raised it or torn it down to the point where Asheville City would not be able to play there next year. Therefore, I would like to believe 2020, Asheville City will be playing in Memorial. I feel pretty confident about making that prediction. So after that vote, after October 22nd, I'm sure we will come back at you and let you know what that final vote was. So keep your eyes on social also. So now, again, taking a step backwards, potentially two step backwards, and looking at just the lower leagues of both the men and the women in general. Most of the leagues here in this country are coming into their playoffs, the NWSL. We have the North Carolina Courage. We also had an ICC competition a couple months back that the Courage partook in. They did not win it, but it was really awesome to, again, see in not just America, but specifically North Carolina, the Raleigh, the Triangle area, host a worldwide event like that that brought the champions of four different women's leagues into one city. And that city happened to be, not just America, but in North Carolina specifically. That's really awesome. Also on the women's side, literally just last night, it was announced that Detroit City is entering into a UWS, the United Women's Soccer League, with a competitive team in 2020. As soon as I saw that, my heart broke a little bit. I would have loved to have seen them in the WPSL, but I guess it just really makes sense for what they're trying to do up there, because a lot of those other clubs up there, there's several in Michigan, there's several are in Ohio. They are all in the UWSL or UWS. And it just makes a lot more sense for them to compete in that. Though one day I hope these de facto Division II women's leagues can maybe work together or figure something out where we do see kind of a cross-pollination of the best against the best. With the men in the lower leagues, I want to look at the USL League One for a quick second, and that is because we have three former Asheville City players in that division right now. Dominic Bolin and Cam Saul, who both play for the Greenville Triumph, who have already clinched a playoff spot, and who have both Dom has played exceedingly, exceedingly well on a defense that is by far the best defense in the league. Dallas J, the Greenville Triumph keeper, is just playing out of his mind. He's keeping clean sheets. He has a ridiculous goals per game count. But in front of him, on the right-hand side, is Dominic. He has played just exceedingly well. I don't necessarily think he's going to be the player of their season, or he's not going to end up on many lists, but he's definitely one of those players that has, coming out of college and then playing for Asheville City for a couple of years, he just has impressed. He has impressed at this level. And then Cam Saul, my former podcast host, has had a rough season where he has just been hit with injury after injury. With, if it wasn't a knee, it was some nerve issues, just different things left and right. But he is fully healthy and banging in goals. Over his last three games, he has three goals. He had a beautiful goal that he kind of dummied and let go past him and then spun back around on it. Two games ago, he had a first half brace on the road. And then this past game, he didn't score, but they had already locked up their playoff spot. He played the full 90, and he is on a purple patch that I fully believe is going to last into the playoffs and could potentially get Greenville deep into that competition. And then we also have Elma Nafor up in Lansing. And Elma, I don't know if anybody saw it or saw the video. If you didn't, please don't go looking for it because it's pretty rough. But he was playing a friendly, I believe, against Indy 11 and took a shot from the keeper, ended up getting stretchered off. It looked like maybe his season, maybe wasn't done, but that concussions are hard to come back from. But he has come back with a vengeance. He has scored many goals. They actually played the Chicago Fire the other night in a friendly. The Chicago Fire played an extremely, maybe not their first team, but it certainly wasn't youth and backup. It was maybe like a 1.5. And Elma just lit them up. He is doing extremely well, and we're very, very proud of all three of them. And then the only other lower league news that I really feel like I would like to get into before we go is, since we last spoke, NISA and the NPSL Members Cup have both kicked off. And I actually believe they're almost wrapping up. They've probably both got about a month left. So we'll kind of take them. I don't think we can actually take them separately. We have to take them together because there is a lot of crossover, truthfully, with many of the Miamis and Chattanoogas and Detroits already announcing that they are moving over. Oakland, who used to be part of the NPSL Founders Cup, already is over in NISA. And so it's not an actual season, apparently. They're labeling it a showcase. What I think basically this is when they had to get up off the ground, they had to play something, and they didn't quite have enough teams. They didn't quite know what was going on. Some of the clubs that I think they went to the Fed and tried to get sanctioned with and already announced, whether those be the teams in Connecticut or Baton Rouge, and that Baton Rouge one was the one that moved from what ended up being, I think, Daytona Beach. They had to do something, and so they didn't quite have enough to play an entire fall season, because remember, they will be going in with a spring-fall split season. Well, I guess fall-spring, technically split season. And so they didn't quite have enough to make this an official thing, but they're holding a showcase. They're playing friendlies against some of these NPSL Member Cup clubs, and they've already had a victim, the Philadelphia Fury, who played. They never played a home game, and I think they played one or two away games, have already suspended operations for this season. And to be quite honest, I would be shocked if they come back in the spring like they said they're trying to. But it it's a rough going so far. If you've seen any of the games, they have chosen to stream their games on MyKuju. They the fan bases of several teams that have not used that platform in the past, and whether they used YouTube or Facebook Live or Twitch, they're very, very frustrated with that platform in general. Some of the other clubs, Atlanta, Stumptown, they're off to strange starts. Stumptown had their first game last night. They did not stream it. They said they would film it and put it up later. Their social presence continues to be baffling, but at least they have one. Atlanta was very, very late to the game. They're actually playing at a chiropractic college who has a stunningly good rugby program down there in Atlanta. So they drew, I believe, less than 150 people to their first game. I'm not expecting much from them, and I would not be shocked if they might try to go through next year, but I would be shocked to see either Stumptown or Atlanta in NISA for an extended period of time. I would not be shocked if both of them have failed out within the next couple of years, which all new leagues do, of course. Everybody forgets the early rough days of USL and some of the clubs that started with them that failed out. Even MLS had a rough go of it 20-something, 25-something years ago. So these are just the growing pains. They don't necessarily mean anything for the overall picture. And NISA has obviously put a priority on club independence. They want each club to stand on their own, whether it be to succeed or fail. And if NISA takes an approach of one out to win, and they can bring in quality clubs who maybe were weighing the options to go pro and the choices were USL League One or NISA, and they see the reduced expansion fee that NISA's not asking for an expansion fee. Their yearly fees are much, much higher than USL League One's, but there is no entry expansion fee per se to speak of. But that even that doesn't necessarily bode well, because the one expansion team that they have already announced for the spring of 2020 is the Michigan Stars, who are taking part in the NPSL Members Cup. And I've heard mixed reactions to that, especially by fans of other clubs in the Michigan or Detroit area who just don't necessarily view them as a professional operation. But you know, that's part of what NISA is. NISA is lowering the barriers to professional soccer. And they basically say, if you meet these professional league standards and you can commit to a year, to a season, you can come in, which has led to a variety of opinion, as would be expected. So guys, that's going to do it for this week's You're Smarter Than Us podcast. We appreciate you. Especially here in the off season, guys, if there's anything you would like to hear, any interviews you would like me to pursue, please do not be afraid to reach out. You can find us on Twitter at @YOURE_smarter, or you can shoot us an email at yoursmarterthanus@gmail.com.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues.